Welcome to False Bottom Girls, a podcast about the wonderful yet sometimes confusing world of beer and brewing.
Hi, I'm Rachel Hudson, owner of Pilot Brewing and an advanced cicerone.
Hi, I'm Jen Blair, sensory expert, homebrewer, and advanced cicerone.
Early day. I woke up at like 7:30, like, no!
Oh, I did the same thing. I was going to get up at 7, and then I was like, we'll make it 7:30. And then I remembered that my alarm has, as for the weekends, has snooze activated. I don't have it activated on my everyday alarm.
Yeah.
But then it's only 5 minutes, but I still snoozed until like 8:15.
You gotta do what you gotta do.
I know. Right. Just... So I had to get up finally and scan my toothpaste. Because that's my alarm. Yeah. Yeah. So welcome everyone to False Bottom Girls. I'm Jen. That's Rachel. I use an app called Alarmy that makes me get out of bed and scan
my toothpaste.
Because you can set it
That's
up like
amazing.
You can do like memory games, math. There's one that like you have to like shake it a certain amount of times. None of those work for me.
Yeah,
because I learned like I can do memory games half asleep pretty well. So I have it set up. You can have it where you scan a barcode, and so I have it set up. So I have to scan my toothpaste. So I have to get up and go in the bathroom, scan the toothpaste. And then I'm already up and I'm already in the bathroom.
That's fantastic.
Yes, it is, until like when we were in Bozeman. Hi, Shayna. Shayna, friend of the pod listening. We were packing on the last day and my alarm went off and Shayna and I were sharing a bathroom. And she was just in there packing, but I just like stumble in. And like, I'm like, oh, hey, sorry, I just need my toothpaste. And I like, scan my toothpaste and walk out. And then I was like, oh, yeah, I do. This is my alarm. This is how I get up in the morning. It makes me get up in the morning. Although I have also just I can still get up and scan my toothpaste and just go back to bed, which I've done plenty of times.
It's really not working out. Very committed though.
When it works out, it works out well. But I have found ways around it. Sometimes I've just deleted the app off my phone because once the alarm starts to go off, you have to scan the toothpaste for it to turn off. Sometimes I just delete the app off, but I've been really trying not to do that.
Oh my god, that's awesome.
That super
you're like, you know,
the purpose.
Not today.
Yeah,
scanner, delete. I will reinstall you later. Then you're like, oh hey, I'm back.
It's yeah. This time I'm really gonna do it.
I love the delete. I love the delete. Yeah, fuck it. Oh man, that is the best intro story we have ever
given. Right?
It really is. Thank you for that. I
yeah,
need
you're
that
welcome.
Laugh.
You could say I'm not always ready to hop to it in the mornings.
Speaking of hops, one of the four main ingredients of beer.
Along with what else?
Oh,
name the other three.
In the words of my 3-year-old nephew.
Hops, water, yeast, and malt.
Yeah. That is my 3-year-old nephew. It is amazing. He is amazing. And he is going to be a brewer, maybe. Or a pilot. Or some sort of business, corporate, venture shark. That's what my brother would prefer. My sister would prefer a therapist, artist, something opposite, you know. So it's kind of funny.
Yes, we we haven't recorded in like 2 months because we got ourselves a nice little store of things, so we're a little rusty at this, but We were trying to think of topics for the podcast, and I looked through our episodes, and I may be wrong about this, but I'm fairly certain that I am not. We have never just had an episode about hops. Like, we've done like Malt 101, we've done like multiple things about water and different kinds of yeast, and like we've talked about hops, but always in the context of
Something else.
something else.
And that's our bad because we've been so immersed in our Master Cicerone test.
Right. And you know,
No.
that is, and we've talked about this, you know, we joke all the time, like beer has four main ingredients, but it's really easy when you're studying, particularly for advanced and master levels, to not state the obvious.
Yes. Oh my God,
And a
yes.
lot of times that's, you know, like that's
Like
where you
hops
can
are one of
lose
the four main ingredients
points.
of beer.
And you know, if somebody was like, hey, tell me about hops on like a very basic level, it would take me a second to like rewind
Recall,
through
yeah.
like farnesene, biotransformation, all of that to get to like, oh, okay, so it comes in these forms, and this is why we use hops. And you
And
know,
there's
just like going
still
through
a
the
lot.
obvious stuff.
Yeah, that's the thing. We haven't gone through the obvious stuff. Like hops are not going to say relatively new. They're obviously not new, but there's still so much about them that we don't know and still so much research to do. Like there's a basis that we know, but there's all these we see all these beers out there, all these different IPAs, and they have 17 different hops in them, and nobody knows what that's going to do. And 99.9% of the time, no one's looking.
Right.
Because there's a t costs a lot of money to analyze beer and hops, and there's only a certain couple programs doing that, and the average brewery isn't going to do anything like that. They're going to, at best, have some tasting notes,
Right.
and based upon what, probably most of the time, a group of white guys. So, like, where's all this information coming from? And that's the problem. Now I say all that to say, like, we know a lot about hops. We do. There's just so much more research that could be done when it comes to these different outputs of flavors and oils and what does what when they are combined. And the one way to only truly know is just to keep brewing and playing with them.
Right.
And every brewer has their what's the best approach when it comes to hops,
Right.
as you know. From listening to me.
I don't know. Have you ever shared any opinions about hops?
I don't know.
Or
I'm
like
definitely
styles of
going to
beer that have a
today.
lot of hops?
Well, it kind of even brings me, on the on that topic of overhopping beer, which is obviously what I'm referring to in these awful styles of hopped beers. But when we did a long time ago, we did an episode with the beerology guys. So, and we would talk to one of the guys who, I'm so sorry, I'm for blanking on names and I feel like an asshole, but he,
Hopnology.
Hopnology, yes. And he, one of the co-hosts works at Siebel teaching a class. And we were talking about hops on that episode. And he was like, even really more than 1 pound per barrel of dry hopping is just like you're wasting your hops. And I'm like, you know what? All I need is for the hopnology guy who t works at Siebel to tell me that. Like, that's fine. Thank you for
Validating.
validating. So let's get into it. Let's get into it. I know I'm talking all over the place about
Sure.
hops because that's what we do.
Right. Well, and one thing that I wanted to add about that too, that I hadn't thought about, you know, we talk about, obviously, we've talked a lot about malt stuff because malt is my favorite. And, you know, with craft malt, like there's all of these newer varieties that are, you know, being bred like specifically to be grown in the Southeast. And so much of the research around malt and barley for a very, very long time has been like Anheuser-Busch, MillerCoors. They have their own varieties, their own proprietary varieties that they make specifically for those beers. And that's where most of the research has been. And that's also, you know, like the deepest pockets, right? So that's where the research is how do we make something that is going to deliver us a very consistent, very, you know, large volume product. And I hadn't ever really thought about that with respect to hops until I was speaking with a researcher at a hop company. And he was like, yeah, it's the same thing for hops because, again, all of that research had been, how do we make hops for industrial lagers? And what are those properties? And I know we've talked before about, like Citra as a hop variety, Cascade as a hop variety almost didn't exist. It was just like one guy who held on to them and said, maybe somebody will want this someday. And that's how a lot of the hop research is too. So to your point, there is a lot that we don't know about how hops work, and a lot of the knowledge that has been applied has been based on the research for how do we make hops for macro lagers. And there's nothing wrong with that, but that's,
Oh
it's
no.
like
Yeah, I get that
everybody kind
because
of realizes like, oh wait, but this isn't, we don't have the same goals as like US grown saws or whatever. Like we want different things from our hops, and there's not research there yet.
And it's expensive. So like you said, unless it makes sense for those bigger producers to want, someone like Anheuser-Busch to want a hop that's perfect for lagers and to put money behind doing that. So we just need to find someone with a really deep pockets who's just doesn't care what the research is about. But
And
like,
there is some of that going on, and I think we'll probably
true.
have a guest on in a few episodes to talk about her research in with hops. But yeah, like there's just stuff that, like you said, we don't know how that's going to affect the beer. We're just kind of doing it. And
Yeah.
like you said, like it at what point is it just a hat on a hat? Are you
Is it just
just,
ridiculous? Yeah.
yeah, are you like incrementally making gains, or are you just hurting yourself? Is it like one step forward and two steps back?
It's definitely, I mean, there's no such thing as where just so much of one thing is the best, right? Like there's a limit where too much of one thing is always going to have its limit. And that goes for hops. And when you are over hopping these beers, in my opinion, having 3, 4, 5, 6 pounds per barrel of hops, to give you a little bit of idea, I just do 1 pound a barrel per hop of Island Hopper, of actually anything. I dry hop, really.
Island Hopper.
Jesus. And I love the single hop. I love doing like just all Columbus, all this. It like really allows you to see what this hop is like. When you get a beer that's just got, oh, it's got 7 hops listed in its description profile, you're like, what is the point of this? And also, which one of those hops is the bittering hop? Because you're not going to really taste that flavor or smell that aroma. And like, not that it really matters, because at that point, 7 hops don't really matter. But it's just like, what is it? It just doesn't matter. Like, okay, if you just have a bunch of hops you need to use, cool. There's your point. But like, other than that, there's no like, oh, well, I'm really gonna get like probably 30% passion fruit and 70% mango out of this hop profile. Like, no, you're not, dude. You don't know.
Here
Sorry.
we go
All right,
again.
here you go. All
I'll
right.
bring in that audio, that clip of Rachel. You don't know.
Max,
Cryothiol
you don't
45.
know.
Max, you
All right.
Oh man, one of the best clips.
We decided that we would use this the second level syllabus for Cicero studying as our like outline for the show whenever we want to start getting onto that topic. So let's do it. You
Yeah.
know, like obviously Jen and I could probably go through this outline and spend 3 hours talking about it. So we can't go as in deep as you probably could if you wanted to go down some rabbit holes of some things. But like the hop section starts with the anatomy of the hop plant and the cone. And I started pulling up my notes and like looking through it, and I was like, like I got these like in-depth notes. It's like all about the different percentages of what the hop cone is made up of. And it's a lot, but basically, what is a hop? You know, I think we should start there because we're so bad at saying what the freaking ingredient is. What is a hop, first of all? It's a flower. It grows on a vine. It's
No, wrong.
no, see,
Grows on a vine.
fine. I am not the master cicerone of the two of us, FYI. But it's a plant that we use in beer that provides acids and oils and contributes bitterness and flavor and aroma to our beer. It's very important. You like hops. If our beer didn't have hops, you would not like that. Trust me. Like, you need
It would
this
be
beer.
Gruit.
It would be gruit and it would
Or
always
maybe
be on the,
not. Yeah.
yeah, it would always be like, you need this bitterness components to balance out the sweetness of beer.
Indeed.
So the hop cone, it's kind of hard to describe, you know, should look up a picture. It's like this, like a bud. It kind of looks like weed, the hop flower.
Yeah, cousins with
They are
cannabis.
cousins. They are cousins of cannabis. And they have a leaves they call, which house like little yellow powders called lupulin glands, and that contains the resins and oils that we need for beer.
Yeah, if you don't
And
know what a hop looks like, just walk into any brewery and somebody there will have a hop tattoo on their arms.
yeah, that's, don't Google anything, just do that. That's very good. Good advice.
Because those of you listening to this podcast about beer and brewing are like, hops?
What are hops? You've never talked about
What do
them.
they even look like? I don't know.
So, you know, hops come in different forms as, so you might be, if you ask someone for their tattoo and they show you a little rabbit pellet, that could be a pellet hop. That would be weird.
That would be weird to go in and be like, yeah, can I get a G45? Thanks. And be like, oh yeah, this pellet, this is Cascade. This one is Zeus. One's Nectaron. Yeah, so we were, before we get to the different forms, let's talk
Yes.
about Rachel, you have never been to a hop farm,
I need
correct?
to go to a hop farm. I don't know what my problem is.
They are awesome. I have been
Yes.
to one in Michigan at Hophead Farms. This was like almost 10 years ago, but it was such a cool opportunity because we went during harvest
Yeah.
and got a tour, and then we actually took We, it was part of a group tour. So we actually took a like a Rubbermaid tote of fresh hops to the like the brewery we were going to
Yeah,
next so they
nice.
could fresh hop their beer. And like I got to carry it off the bus. I'm so cool. I've got this big tote of hops. But they're beautiful to see, particularly for me, for somebody like who likes symmetry and stuff. Like hop fields are just very
Oh, yeah.
cool to see. And I mean, if you've been really by like any field, like a cornfield, you know, something like that, like it is all very lined up. And with the hop field, they have the structure is, you know, there will be rows of hops. So like we said, hops grow on vines, which means that they grow upward. And the vine also wraps around counterclockwise, I think.
It
And
follows
like,
the sun. Yeah.
yeah. And they can grow, you know, 18 to like 22 feet high. So they can get really, really tall. And they use basically like telephone poles
Yeah.
with, you know, rope strung between the two of them. And then you train the hops to go up the tr or up the like twine or whatever, and
Yeah.
they will, and they grow really, really fast. And they grow from what's known as a rhizome, which is like a root. And when I lived in Chicago, I actually grew some hops one summer and like got a pretty good yield, but watching them grow, it really was amazing. Like I have a picture. I went out one morning and put a twist tie on my hop where it was in the morning.
Was, yeah.
And by the afternoon, no joke, it was like 3 or 4 inches above that. Like
Wow.
they grow super, super fast. They're going to grow kind of like throughout the summer. Like they're kind of like summer barley, you know, where you plant it in the winter and then you harvest it in the fall.
Yeah.
And harvest time is, like I said, when we were at the Hophead Farms, they were doing harvest. They have, you know, this big machine that comes through and kind of cuts all of the binds and then pulls like the entire thing to this like hop processing machine. And those like, and when I say the whole thing, I mean leaves, bind, hops, everything. And then they go through various stages of processing where they get down to just the hops. But they used to, hops used to be handpicked. And you can actually find there's a gentleman in Charlotte who collects a lot of like Birriana stuff, and he has a collection of hop coins that you would get. It's basically like scrip, like the company store. You would get paid, you know, in these hop coins for harvesting. And places like in the UK, people would actually, that would be their vacation, would be to go to, you know, a hop farm and like pick hops. It's like this fun summer vacation thing.
Cool.
Yeah.
As a business owner, very cool.
So with hops, like that's, you know, it is an agricultural product, beer, and just like barley, hops are also an agricultural product. And an interesting thing about them, so when I say the summer that I planted the hops in Chicago, I got a really good yield from some of them. Like my Zeus hops were amazing, but I was kind of surprised because with hop rhizomes, you usually don't get production in the
Yeah.
first year or two.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like planting a fruit tree. You know, you have to kind of play the long game with it. And with like some of the hops that I planted, like my Centennial, I didn't get any hops from that. But then, you know, I was like, okay, well, if I wasn't there the next year to help them
Yeah.
grow, so I don't know if they did or not. But you usually will not get a good amount of hops from the first 1 or 2 years, which
Yeah.
also makes being a hop grower
Yeah.
really hard to do because you have to try to anticipate what are people going to want in 2 years. And, you know, like right now, well, I won't say right now because I think it's kind of starting to go down, but like hazy IPAs, you know, like the DDH IPAs and things like that, you know, maybe as consumers, our tastes will completely change and nobody wants like the tropical fruit, the caddy, you know, like the diesel, garlic, onion, like all of those kinds of hop profiles that are really popular now. Like maybe you grow a bunch of those, and by the time you're harvesting them, everybody's like, ugh, you know, like my ancestors used that. Why would I want this hop? So it can make it really difficult for hop growers
Oh,
to
for
be able
sure.
to forecast what kinds of hops are people going to want. And Rachel, you may remember this because you worked at NODA at the time, but when NODA in Charlotte first opened, they had hop drop and roll, and that was an entirely Citra beer. And, or I don't know if it was entirely Citra, but it was like a beer that had Citra in it. And that was right when Citra was like the cool hop to have. And, you know, it's like all of a sudden everybody discovered Citra, but there wasn't enough Citra to keep up with
Citra, yeah.
demand. So it's like,
Which
okay, then what do you do? How do you keep making this flagship? And I think that's where some of the, like, if you use seven hops, then you can just substitute one for the other and nobody really knows. But it's like,
yeah, I guess.
I
I mean,
guess if you can just substitute that and nobody knows, then why is it
what's
in there? Yeah.
the
Hat on a hat, hop on a hop. But yes, you do need to go to a hop farm
Yeah, I really
because
do.
they're very cool. And it's funny, they said that everybody at Hophead Farms, they were like, yeah, during harvest, like we said, cannabis is a cousin, so it smells kind of like weed. And they
Yeah.
were like, we just smell like weed all the time.
Yeah.
Like, and we all have like
Like
the
oil
lupulin
resin,
powder,
yeah.
yeah, just all over you, and like it seeps into you, so you just smell like hops during harvest.
That's okay.
Right, like I wouldn't
Yeah.
mind that.
And like different regions for the United States are going to be like Yakima Valley and Washington and Oregon and Idaho. Michigan is doing a lot of hop growing.
New
So
York
these are
State
New
used to
York State.
be the
Yeah.
biggest producer of hops, until they had wilt happen
Yeah.
and they lost their crops, and then that's when it moved to like Yakima. So between the 35th and 55th parallels in the northern hemisphere and the southern hemisphere are where hops grow well. So like we can grow hops in North Carolina or in Georgia. They're not going to be good
Yeah,
to
there
use,
are
you
some people
know.
growing around here, and I've had one guy come into the brewery, and the problem is that he just has his whole leaf product. So like, and we'll get to the different forms, but I, as a small brewery, can really only use the pelletized product. And not, that's part of having the hop farm is like, yeah, we've grown these hops and we have this product, but we still have to process it. And those hop farms have to have the equipment to do that. Drying, the harvesting, the drying, and the baling, plus like storage and processing, getting it to the brewery. So,
Pelletizer.
and then the pelletizer. Yeah. So the pellet, we're taking this cone product that looks like a weed bud, for lack of better description. And if you're getting it in a pellet form, which can basically look like rabbit food, that is like the kind of the most useful way for breweries to use these hops. So that is what we're looking for a lot of the times. Now, there are breweries that will use the whole leaf cone hop in that form for special reasons, or maybe that is what they do, like Sierra Nevada. It sounds like a nightmare to work there, honestly, like as a brewer. Whew. Like that's a lot. Like when I worked at Noda, right when I was leaving, they started doing using the hop back for a hop drop and roll, which is full of just whole leaf hops. And then after knockout, in between going to, or sorry, after the whirlpool, in between starting knockout, they go through this hop back, but you have to load that hop back and you have to unload it and clean it. And I swear to God, I did it like once, because like that's just the timing of when they started and when I left. And I was just like, I am so happy to be leaving. Like, oh my God. And this is nothing compared to like the brewers of Sierra Nevada. So Sierra Nevada uses whole leaf hops for everything. Such a nightmare. Everything. Like dry hopping, like their torpedo IPA, that is a torpedo back filled with hops that they run the beer through. Such a nightmare. Now, I'm sure they have like a better way at Sierra Nevada to get all the spent hops out and sent to the appropriate silo. Whereas Noda, at the time, we had a trash can that we would put underneath and we would catch them as they fall out and drag it outside. So it's a little bit more labor intensive. But so that's where in the United States, obviously that's where we grow hops, but you can also grow hops in way other regions, and they provide different properties as well when it comes to the types of levels of, or the different oils that they have in them, types of characteristics they impart when it comes to flavor and aroma. But Germany, or Europe, big growing region in Germany, Czech Republic, Belgium, Slovenia, Poland, France, all hop, good hop growing regions, also all up in that same area as the United States.
Right, exactly. And that's what I like to tell people is like if you look at a map and you look at like, you know, where Yakima is and where Idaho is, and then you're looking at Germany, like you can draw that line across
Yeah.
the map, and same in the southern hemisphere as well, like Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, those are
Exactly.
all in that same 35th, 55th parallel in the southern hemisphere. And so you can I like that's a really helpful way to,
Yeah, it's
you
like
know,
the
because you hear
Earth
like
has
parallels
two
and it's like,
bands.
but yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. But yeah, you just draw that band right across the globe and you can see like, yeah, these are where the hop growing regions are, or
And then
where
that.
the good hop growing regions are.
Yes. You can, like, yeah, Jen, I mean, you, like I said, you could grow them in North Carolina. Jen grew some in Chicago. Like, you can do it. Just, I don't
Yeah.
know if you should just start a hop farm. Like,
Right.
let's
Although in Chicago,
hobby hops.
I was in that
You're
parallel.
in that parallel? Okay. I don't know the globe that well, because the
But
earth
yeah.
is flat to some people. So, I like to be inclusive. Just kidding.
No, we are not inclusive of flat earthers. Sorry.
I like to go ahead and guess that flat earthers are not listening to our podcast.
Probably not.
But yeah, like you said, that southern hemisphere, you have like Australia and New Zealand and Africa. Although I don't know if I've ever had any hops from Africa, but
I've
I
had some
will.
South African hops, like as a home brewer, I've used them. But if I remember correctly, like Saab Miller at one point basically
Yep.
bought up all of the South African
That's what
hops.
I
So
was
you,
thinking.
it, like, I don't know
So
how
maybe we have
available
if
they
you've
are.
had Miller Lite.
I doubt it. I doubt for Miller
Yeah.
Lite, but yeah, for as a home brewer, at one point I got some South African hops, and they were interesting. Like they're definitely not, or they're on the same level, like organoleptically, as Australian New Zealand hops. Like they have a little bit more of those tropical flavors. But if I remember
Yeah.
correctly, the South African hops had really, really high alpha acids, and they were almost like a cross between like an American hop and like an Australian hop, in that there was just a little bit of roughness. How like a lot of US hops, people outside of the United States will describe US
That like
hops as being kind
harsh,
of a,
yeah.
yeah, rough, harsh.
Yeah.
And the South African hops were kind of like that.
Yeah. And then like hops grown in the continental Europe region are going to be more on the like floral, herbal, side, not a ton of like citrus, grapefruit character, which you might get from American hops. You know, so these hops do have their place for different styles. It's not good enough to just be like, I'm going to use one type of hop in every single beer I make all the time.
Right. Unless you just make one single kind of beer.
That's you just, yeah. If you just want to make other beers, like it is important to know the different flavor compounds. And even like hops are brewed in like the UK too. And there's going to have like woodsy characteristics or even like honey or slight hay or, you know, those fungal and EKG products are going to go well with your European or English style beers. I mean, so knowing the where the hop is important region is important because it is going to provide a certain characteristics of flavor and aroma for your style. But then we have our, you know, hops are also categorized in bittering hops or aroma hops or dual use hops. And for me, I don't necessarily like categorizing hops like that. And I know I've talked about this on the podcast before. Bittering hops tend to be categorized as having like high alpha acid. But you can still use those hops as aroma hops. Like they have aroma qualities and flavor properties. Like they're not just a bittering agent, you know? So I think it's just confusing when you're learning about hops, those kind of terms.
And I agree with you. All hops can be, you can use an aroma hop as a bittering hop. It's just not going to be the best use of
Yeah, well, you're
that
going to use a
hop,
lot more of
probably.
it because it's going to be more expensive. So, like, you're bittering, like, you have a beer that's a certain amount of alcohol level, right? And that alcohol level comes from sugar. And so, you need these hops to counter out that sugar. So, like, alpha acids, so hops contain of alpha acids, beta acids, they contain oils, resins. Well, these acids are what kind of we use as a calculation to go against the amount of sugar to see kind of where that balance of hops and sugar lies. And the higher of the alpha acid is going to give you more alphas, IBUs, more umph, right? So like, yes, it makes more sense to use that as a bittering hop because you can, the hop stays in the boil longer. And the bittering hop we're talking about, let's say we have a 60-minute boil. This hop is going to be thrown into the boil right at the beginning. So it's in the boil for the whole hour, the whole 60 minutes. The longer that the hop is in there, the more IBUs it's going to impart into your beer, your final product, right? So the higher the alpha acids, the longer it's in there, the more IBUs. Like this is where we're getting our max IBUs.
Or I would
And then,
say, sorry,
or
this
you
is
don't
going to
have to be
sound very
max. Yeah.
pedantic. I would say that is going to be our perceived bitterness rather than IBUs because IBU
Yes,
is
you're
like a very
correct.
specific lab measurement that means
Yes.
nothing outside of like one specific test. But I understand what you're saying.
Yes, like if
But
you're
yeah.
looking at, so like I use Beersmith, for example, for right recipes. And if you're looking at that while you're in, adding your hops into your recipe and you're seeing that IBU number increase, there are other things increasing too, like your bitterness ratio over to the side. And your bitterness ratio is more important than your IBU. Quick back to your point about the perceived bitterness of something, right? So we talk about IBUs in the sense of like recipe formulation and not in the sense of like IBUs, in my opinion, should not be put on beer labels. It is
Right.
not a consumer
It's not
descriptor.
anything. Yeah.
It doesn't mean anything to you because my IPA and my cafe, my stout could have the same amount of IBUs for different reasons. And you are not going to taste the same amount of hops in each of those beers. But back to that, when you're looking at your recipe, if you are doing this, and you're like, okay, I've put in my grain, now I need to add hops. You're like, well, this is what I do at least. I start with my grain, and Beersmith has a, and I imagine both most brewing programs would, has like a range. You're like, okay, I want to make an amber ale, and the Beersmith says, all right, the alcohol, the ABV range for this style is going by the BJ certification guidelines. So it says BJCP says this style has ABV range of this, IBU range of this, SRM, all that jazz, OG, FG. So it's a good guide for you to like, okay, I want to keep within this range.
Right.
So you get the malt in there and you're like, I have a 5% beer. It's an IPA. My IBU range for this style says anywhere from 40 to 70. So what do I do? That's where your bitterness ratio comes into play. So your bitterness ratio is typically I'm using Beersmith as my viewing, but it's typically off to the side of the equation. And as you enter in hops, your bitterness ratio will go up. And that is what the perfect balance for that style is of the range. So let's say your IPA has an ABV range of what, 5.5 to 7.5, and an IBU range of 40 to 70. Now, let's say you have a 6.5% IBU, I mean ABV, 6.5 alcohol percent beer. Are you going to do 40 IBU or are you going to do 70 IBU? And how do you know? So there's a chart that you can Google for bitterness ratio chart, and it will give you a style guide list of all the styles and what that bitterness ratio should be to be the perfect balance for that style. Now, you can obviously, this is just a guide. Like you can obviously do what you want. If you want a more bitter IPA, you can do that. But this is like a good guide to start with, especially as you're learning how to brew. You could say like, all right, my IPA, I think an American IPA has a bitterness ratio of like 1.13. English IPA might be like 0.84. And I could be wrong. I'm just doing that from rough memory. But I know the difference is something like that. And then
Right.
you like, so for example, like my West Coast IPA, Island Hopper, it's a 6% beer, but it's got a bitterness ratio of 1.13. According to that chart, which is if I just put that in there, that's about a 70 IBU beer. Now, that doesn't like necessarily line up with what you would think of the scale if the alcohol range ends at 7.5 and the IBU range ends at 70, because I got a 6% beer. You know what I'm saying? So just because you're like, well, my triple is at the high end of alcohol, so it should be at the high end of IBUs. Yes, in theory, that sounds correct, but it might not actually be correct. And that's where that bitterness ratio can kind of clarify that for you. Now, like I said, you can do anything you want as a brewer, but
Right.
I rely on that a lot. And I actually follow it to the T when I write my recipes. And I win a lot of medals. So there you go. But
You can do what you
to
want.
bring
I'm
that
just
all
saying that
back,
I win a lot of medals.
but we bring that all back to the point of like you have your bittering hops, your aroma hops. I'm not even going to talk about dual purpose hops because everything's a dual purpose hop, in my opinion. Like
Right.
you can, your bittering hop, like I said, the citra hop, it's like a 13% alpha acid hop. It is in your best interest to, okay, This is where it, this is a perfect example. It is also like $35 a pound. Okay. It's a very expensive hop. You can get hops
Right.
for like $10 a pound. This is like a very expensive hop. And that might not be true anymore. It might be a little less, but let's just say it is. But it's a 13% alpha acid. I may not want to use that in my bittering and save all that glorious aroma and flavor for all my late additions because it's so expensive and I want the flavor and aroma. And if I just put it in my bittering, I'm getting none of that. Yes, I'm getting a high alpha acid content hop to use for it, but why not just use Columbus for my bittering when it's $10 a pound that has 14% alpha acid and then
Right.
save my Citra for my late edition?
Right.
Boom. Perfect example of why that category doesn't make sense when it comes to alpha acid content. Now, like
Yes, I think that's true. And Citra is also a good example of Citra as a bittering hop. Like, yes, it has a high alpha acid, but Citra's bitterness isn't the same kind of quality as something like Columbus is. And that's,
true.
like Citra is not a good bittering hop, but you can use it as a bittering hop, but it's not, like you said, like kind of the flip side of that. Like, yeah, you want to save it for the aroma because that's really why you're using Citra, but also it's just not that good. Like the quality of bitterness that it imparts is a little bit harsher than something like Columbus.
Yeah, I mean, I've done an all Citra IPA, and I don't know if I've necessarily picked up on that specifically, versus Columbus, which brings me back to my point. Not even fucking know it. Like, all, and I'm sitting here telling you, like, I've done multiple single hop beers of both those hops, and not saying that it doesn't. I'm just saying, as a, me, Rachel Hudson, I have not even like. Maybe I should go more out of the way to try to pick it up, but I haven't. Then on the flip side, using these aroma hops, like I've used aroma hops, using low alpha acid hops and bittering additions, I've done before and it's totally fine to do if you're just going to use more of the product.
Right.
And but I do think some hops are great for, like, I don't necessarily like the aroma of Chinook,
I
but
don't either.
I will use it in my bittering hop because it's got a high alpha acid, and I actually have some in my freezer that I need to use. Another reason why I'm using it. And yeah, because once it's gone, I probably won't reorder it. But it's a good alpha acid hop. I mean,
Right.
yeah, high alpha acid. So it makes for a good bittering hop. And not my favorite aromas. And it's kind of catty. I have also, I don't think I've ever used it straight bittering. I've always mixed it with something just because it's not my favorite either. But
Right.
and there's a lot
Right.
of theory too, like how bittering hop doesn't matter, like about flavor and aroma at all. It's just strictly for IBU contribution. Some
Yeah.
brewers go by that, some don't. I mean, I makes sense.
Right. Or like I do my and I know we'll talk about it in a minute, but I do my double IPA homebrew recipe. I just buy the ISO extract and add that. Because it's a known quantity of bitterness that
Yeah.
I'm adding, and it's just bloop,
That's probably,
comes in a little
yeah.
syringe. You put it in there, and you know how many, you know, you get like a 10 mil little syringe, and if I want, and that's 100 IBUs. So if I want 70 IBUs, I just push it down until I get that amount out, and it goes right into the boil. And then it's just a little bit more of a known
Yeah, I
quantity.
think that's great. Like, we'll talk more about the forms in a second, but I love the extract as a bittering addition because you save so much room, just
Yeah,
like a
true.
space, you know, there's a lot of good reasons. But like, let's just talk about the chemistry of the hop real quick. Like, why, you know, how it works. So we're throwing it in the boil, right? We also put it in dry hopping. But we're talking about these acids and these alpha acids. They have to be like released. They don't just like work. So it's kind of like weed. You can't just eat the flower. You have to cook the flower. Right? That's what I
I'm
learned.
sure I don't know.
That's the way hops work. Well, they are cousins. So, like, you have to boil hops to get the bittering contributions from them. They go through a process called a isomerization. So it's basically their molecule format just changes like positions. It's like a little football team, and they're like, "Oh, quick, we're gonna switch up positions." And then they're set. It's like that. Like they don't add or delete players, they just change teams, change
Right.
positions.
Yes. And I remember when I was studying for my second level, the day that I was able to say isomerization, I was like, somebody get me a lab coat. I mean, I am a scientist. I can say isomerization.
Right. I have that feeling often with words.
Yeah, kind of like esterification. Like that's,
Esterification.
I'm just never quite sure if I finish saying the word. And isomerization is kind of like that.
Yeah, but alpha acid isomerization, if you know you're studying for CICERO and you're looking at the syllabus and you're like, what's that? That is the chemical process of releasing bitterness compounds into the beer. You have to boil the hops for them to go through that. However, you're like, well, what about dry hopping? And that goes in for the fermenter, right? And there's no boiling actually of those hops. Well, dry hopping is strictly to release like flavor or aroma attributes, and you don't need to boil because you're not trying to impart IBUs in that process or bitterness. You're just getting aroma, and those don't need to be boiled. And they also work very well for that stage of the process because they have antimicrobial properties where it allows like shelf stability of your beer. Hops do a lot of things actually for the longevity of the beer. And it's one of the reasons the world started using hops. A couple of reasons. One, the hops were taxed. Everybody was paying taxes to the gruit houses to get their gruit for their batch of beer. And that's how you made the beer. You had to go buy the gruit. And then so hops came along. They weren't being taxed. They were cheaper to use, and then they were making the shelf life of the beer last longer. Not only do they help with shelf life, but and bitterness and flavor and aroma, but they help with mouthfeel, giving your beer a little bit more fullness. They help with foam and lacing, flavor stability, shelf stability with their antimicrobial properties, which will inhibit the growth of organisms that will damage like flavor and appearance to the beer. So it was a good find, in my opinion, you know? Let's get the gruit
Yeah.
out.
Right. And that was also the difference between ale and beer.
True. When they started producing hops, because
Right.
hops was also kind of known, they were like, well, that's not a quality product. That's a poor man's product. And they're like, well, yeah, literally, because it's free and the gruit is not. But it was, yeah, ale was made with gruit and beer was made with hops. And those were the difference. It wasn't ale and lager at that point. With the oils, we talk about all these alpha and acids that are in there. Beta acids are a type of acids that we are find and that are quantized in from the hop producer, but we don't really take those into account when we're writing our beer recipe.
Right.
They are an indicator of like how much your hops can kind of break down in storage. If I'm correct about that, like an ox, how much they can oxidize in storage, beta acids. So lower the number, the better. But I've never seen a hop with like a super high beta acid content.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think I have either. And then the beta acids are also where that preservative power of hops comes from, which is why in like spontaneous fermentation beers, you use aged hops. You're aging those alpha acids out of the hops. So you're not getting the bitterness because in a beer that's got sour or acidity to it, the acidity is balancing the sweetness rather than the bitterness balancing the sweetness. And you don't really want bitter and acidic in the
Yeah.
same beer. So you age those alpha acids out of the hops, which leaves the beta acids, which act as a preservative.
And then also those the higher the IBU of the beer, the more it will inhibit the lactobacillus growth as well. So you like you it's just kind of a double benefit. You get the beta acids to like Jen said, now I'm having a brain fart to help with the antimicrobial properties and then low alpha acids, which you need, otherwise it will inhibit that lactobacillus growth.
Right, which is also why if you have Something like a Gosa or a Berliner Weiss, where you want that lactic acid. That's why they have very low IBUs.
And you don't have to use like aged hops are really characteristic for lambic. You don't have to use them in Gozer or Berliner Weiss or even lambic. Like if you, as long as you're keeping things really, really low, you could still kind of emulate the same usage. But and then oils, there's like kind of the four main prominent oils that we talk about in hops, myrcene. Say the next one. Clarifilene. Ah, I'm so bad.
Clarifying.
Myrcene, carafilene, humulene.
So yes, so we've got four major compounds of the hop oils, and those are going to be myrcene, humulene, carafilene, and farnesene.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Myrcene is kind of this green, herbaceous, resinous aroma
Oh,
associated
myrcene.
with fresh
Sorry, I don't mean
hops.
to interrupt you,
I was like,
but
what's wrong? It's
myrcene is also the
not my
largest
favorite.
compound in tomato vine, and tomato vine is one of my top five favorite smells in the world.
Yeah. It's not
I
my
grow
favorite.
tomatoes every year, and I'm always my husband will walk by and I'm just smelling the vine, or I'll have it on my hand and I'm smelling my hand, which is always weird,
Because you have
to
to
see
explain
anybody smelling their hand. But that is myrcene is one of the most flavor active compounds in tomato vine, and I fucking love it so much.
If you have a fresh hop beer, you'll probably pick up this aroma. It is very plant material like. It's not my favorite at all. Like, I mean, a hop, like a pelletized hop with like a high amount of myrcene, fine, but like when you get dump those fresh hops into the beer, that's when you can like really, really get it. And
And myrcene is in the boil, myrcene doesn't survive into the finished beer. And so, like you're saying, with a dry hop, you might be able to pick it up. And I remember asking Dr. Simpson, is myrcene what's responsible for hop burn? And it's not. And I believe they still don't know exactly what causes hop burn, which is, going back to the beginning when you said there's just a lot of stuff we don't know. And that hop burn is one of the things. But it's okay, well, this wasn't really an issue until we started using a ton of hops in the dry hop, and doing the triple dry hop, or whatever. And so now it's an issue. So it seems like that would be from the dry hopping, but we're not quite sure what's causing that. And hop burn is not okay
No, it's not. It's
in
awful.
any beer. And I am going to fight that line. I've judged with people before who are like, no, I really like hazies, and hop burn is part of a well-made hazy. And I
No,
said,
it's not.
no, it is not. No, it is
Stop
not.
it. You shouldn't
Yes,
be here.
I had the same conversation at World Beer Cup, because they had, I think they had in the guidelines specifically, hop burn is a fault. And as a table, we had a discussion that was like, yes, hop burn is a fault. We're
Yes,
not going to
good.
let you say the world is flat and hop burn is good.
Fuck
I think we've got to draw the line
it.
somewhere.
And myrcene is like the majority of the oil too, in the American hops at least. Like often, like 50% or more of the oil is going to be myrcene. And like you said, most of the aroma is lost during boil.
And when we're talking about this too, what I think is really interesting about flavor and aroma in hops, so it comes from the essential oils in the hops. Those count for 0.5 to maybe 3% of the hop. So think about how much hop aroma and flavor you can get in a lot of different beer styles. And that's just this teeny, teeny, tiny
Teeny
little
tiny bit.
part.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Your alpha acids can get like, anywhere from like 0 to 22%. Beta acids, like probably up to like 10%, highest. And then you have polyphenols, you have lipids and waxes, and cellulose, moisture. Cellulose is 40 to 50% of the hop cone. And I was like, What is cellulose? And I went and looked it up, and it's like a type of fiber.
Yeah, it's like paper.
Yeah, they use it. They can extract cellulose to use it for paper making. There's a group like in Japan, I believe, in like the 2000s that were taking hops, like I guess spent hops or the hop plant material, and extracting cellulose nanofibers out of the cellulose and using it for the automotive and housing industry. So they're like upcycling these stems, which was cool. So it wasn't just like we're going to grow hops for this. It was like we're going to take the hops away that they don't use. I don't know exactly how that works because I feel like as a big hop producer, you like throw everything into the machine.
Yeah, there, I mean, there must be some
There
way
must be
to
something
harvest
because,
it, but that's, you know, we were talking about this before we started recording too, that hops are used for beer. Outside of beer, there's not a market for hops. So as the beer industry is shrinking, as, you know, it's becoming more of like a plateau or even, you know, declining, what are these hops producers going to do, particularly, you know, like American hops, or like Australia, New Zealand, relatively new hop markets? What are you going to do when there isn't enough beer being produced? Because hops don't have really a use outside of beer. You can use them, like you can buy like hop pillows because hops can help you sleep, but like there's not a market. Like
No, yeah.
if your barley doesn't meet spec for malting, you can still sell it as feed.
True.
Like you have an alternative. If
Yeah.
you don't need hops, there's not an alternative market for hops
No,
as
there's
of
like
yet.
novelty uses. Like people will make soap and pillows and little things like that, but I don't
Yeah,
foresee
there's like Etsy
a
uses, not
huge,
industrial
I don't
uses.
foresee industrial use at all. It's
Yeah, so that's
no.
interesting that they're doing that kind of research because there's not a market
Yeah, it's
outside of
good.
beer.
It's good too, because it's a what's it called? A substitute for a harsher use chemical, that we're not
Right.
always going to have access to as well.
Right.
And then we could just hit on the types of we talk about hops in like all these different forms. You have whole leaf hops, pellet hops. You have extracts. Jen was talking about how she likes to use extract. Extract would be like oil form, where you could just you have like a set. Like she has like this set. Like every hop batch has like okay, this is the batch from this year, and it's this alpha acid. So like your citra is not going to be the same alpha acid for every crop. It will be pretty similar, but it could be two alpha. 2% off from one batch to another. So that's important to know when you're writing your recipes. But like having that information is vital no matter the form that you're using, the pellet. The whole hops are like an actual what you pull off the vine,
Right.
the whole thing. Again, that's a lot. That's not the most best way to brew beer, in my opinion, because for me, I have such a small system. I am putting all the plant material into the wort when I only really need the little powder inside the leaves. I only need that lupulin. And then that all of so I'm using like imagine a huge handful, two handfuls worth of hops versus like one little pellet form. And all of those hops are absorbing all that wort as well. So I'm like losing all this extra volume of beer and it has a lot of plant material in it that is going to have a better chance of surviving into the finished product than just the pellet forms. So, not my favorite. Expensive. Well, expensive in the sense that I have no idea the price difference, actually, but in the sense of how much I'm losing.
Right.
I'm
Right.
not a big brewery,
It's not
so
efficient to use
it's not
whole cone.
efficient. Extracts, I do love them. Because even with the whole cone taking up volume, pellets also take up volume. And the more you're going to dry hop, the less that you're going to have come out of that fermenter. Again, you can use hop oils for bittering. You can also use them for aroma and flavor additions, dry hopping additions, really for everything. And the one thing I don't like about the oil is that it will decrease your head retention a little bit. And you can kind of taste it a little. Like, you know how you have like an extract beer versus like whole fruit? Kind of get that.
That's interesting. I don't know
You
if I've
know?
noticed that before, but I believe you. I can
Yeah.
see that. Like there's just kind of that je ne sais quoi that's missing.
Like, it's almost like diminished, kind of. I don't know the best way to describe it because I've only done one experiment. Just had a
Oh,
sample with
sounds
oil.
like we've got an
Sounds like we
opportunity
do.
for a side by side.
There are other forms like you can get at the homebrew store too, like that. If you know, like I said, we're going through our syllabus for the second level certified. We're talking about like plug forms. You can get hops in like a plug form, which is not listed on here. And that is just like imagine the whole leaf hops, but compressed into a plug. So that's just another source of whole leaf hops, really. But if you go in to the store, you see all these different forms. You don't know what to use. It is important to kind of educate yourself because even the pellets, you have a T90 product versus a T45 product. And that is saying like a T90 pellet is going to have 90% of that pellet is plant material. Whereas the T45 pellet, 45% of that pellet is plant material, which means there's a lot more lupin, which probably means it has a lot more oomph per pellet, you know, in the sense of like giving you IBUs or alpha acids or something. Can't treat them all the same. That's important to know for your recipe. Otherwise, you might have double the hop IBU than you intended for because you didn't put in the right type of pellet. And there's so many new things too, you know, just outside of your syllabus, but like, you know, back to my rant. I mean, what else there? You know, what's funny about, I don't know if you caught that episode where I just like, I guess I don't know what we're talking about. We're about to talk about New England IPAs, I'm sure.
We were talking about haze.
Oh, yeah, there you go. And Jed just let me go at it. And I end it with Max. I didn't even know that Max was a thing when I said that. Like, then I saw something and I was like, can you please explain to me what it is? Because I don't even remember. It was like
Lupomax
Lupo
is,
Max.
I think that's a Haas product,
Okay, type of hop.
maybe, but yeah. But then I think for a while after that, just anytime I saw the word Max on a beer can, I would send it to you.
Yeah. Max. Thiols. Yeah, thiols. Cryos.
cryo,
Max.
mixed with citra,
Flower.
mixed with, yeah. You don't know.
You don't know. Stop acting like you know. But you can throw these hops at different points of the beer. They go in the boil. Obviously, we talked about that and why it's important. You could also do Whirlpool edition where the boil kind of cuts heat. New England IPA lovers love to get this Whirlpool tip down to like 190, something like that, before they add their Whirlpool hops. I don't do that out of spite. I'm just
I
kidding.
do.
I don't do that because I don't need to. It's fine. Waste
I do.
time.
I do Whirlpool editions for my
Cool. You
IPAs.
don't have to brew two batches in one day. You need
That's
10
true.
other things to do.
I
So
don't.
fuck
Yeah,
it.
you're right.
Fuck it.
That's like my Saturday. So
Yeah.
I can do that.
No, I was just going to end on dry hopping as kind of the last thing to and what that is. I mean, we've talked about it plenty other times on other episodes, I'm sure. But this is when you're adding just the hops to the straight fermenter after it's, some brewers like to do it right at peak fermentation. Some like to do it at the end of fermentation. And this is just going to give an extra aroma to your beer. In my opinion, you don't need to overdo this. You're just going to waste a bunch of beer. But what do I know?
You know, it's funny, and I don't know if you have like a similar experience, but I remember in Chicago, like 2013, 2014, you know, it was when like I had just moved there. Noda had opened, you know, like Birdsong had opened, and it was really, we were still in that wave of homebrewers opening breweries. And it seems like the like trends, and I know that there are trends now as well, but I remember dry hopping being a thing that like I forgot some home brewer did, and then other home brewers started doing it, and then brewers, you know, home brewers who had become brewers were dry hopping. And I remember, like, you know, you would ask, like, it was such a sexy thing, like, this was dry hopped, because it was, again, you know, with craft brewing,
Yeah.
like, Anheuser-Busch isn't dry hopping
Yeah,
anything,
true.
so it's like, oh, you can add hops at the end, you know. And so it was a very,
Yeah.
like, ooh, this is dry hopped. And now it's like, you know, your fucking Pilsner's dry hopped, or, you know,
Yeah.
or whatever. Like, here's my dark mild has been dry hopped. Like, everybody dry hops everything now. But I remember that being like,
Yeah.
oh, like, technology, this is sexy. And now it's like triple dry hopped.
Oh,
Rawr.
God. Now you can't trust anything. You're like, tell me about this IPA before I order it. How does it look? Let's just start
What's
there.
your bitterness ratio?
I
What hop products did you use? How did you use them? There we go, everyone. We've given you the
like, I
tools to
don't
be the
know.
most obnoxious person that
They're
a
like,
brewer has
I
talked
work
to.
2 days a week.
They're
Today was not supposed to
like,
be one of
this
those days.
person
So
just came
really.
in and demanded to see my tattoos because they knew I was going to have a hop tattoo. And now they're asking me what products I use and what my utilization is and why. And did I dry hop and did I whirlpool? And you can tell them, false bottom girl sent me.
Yeah, do that.
Yeah, there's, I mean, we can do like an entire other episode of hop
Oh, yeah.
related things, because apparently we just have ignored hops for the
Yeah.
past almost 5 years now.
Don't know why. I use
We,
them
I
all the
mean, like I
time.
said, we have addressed them in other aspects, but we
Yeah.
never did like a hops 101. And I mean, we kind of did today, but we can still talk a lot. All hops that are used in brewing are female.
Ah, it's true. It's because male hops will have produce seeds, and that's not very like us good for the process of like pelletization, like in the companies, the hop farms that gets in the way.
Right. It
And
gets in the way and it adds, you know, flavors
I was gonna
to
say, I
it.
don't know the other reasons if there are other reasons.
Yeah, so the if there is a male, so if anybody's listening who has not learned about birds and bees yet, maybe skip this part. But when a female hop and a male hop love each other very much, then they will pollinate, right? Or whatever hops do. And then the female hop will have those seeds. And so you don't want that. So if you find like a male hop or hermaphroditic hop, then you want to get rid of that, because that can also, you know, if you've got your hop field here and somebody else has a hop field down the road and there's a rogue male hop plant, that can still affect your hops. Like, those seeds can still travel. So yeah, you all hop plants used in brewing are female. One of the other things that we didn't talk about, and I think we can probably end on this, is and I do think that it's on the syllabus, is you can get certain hop products that are extracts, like specifically row hop extracts are also, you might see them as tetra hops.
Oh,
So
yes.
those are
Yes.
hops that the alpha acids and isoalpha acids are not present in this extract. So that means you can still bitter your beer, but it's not going to become light struck. And we haven't talked about light struck.
True.
But you can
Yeah.
bitter, you can use these tetra hops or these row hop extracts to add bitterness without adding those isomerized alpha acids. And so that way you can package your beer in a clear bottle.
Yes.
So I kind of told you the end of the story before I told you the rest of the story.
Yeah.
When UV light interacts with with isomerized iso alpha acids, oh my God, isomerized isoalpha acids, isoalpha acids in beer, that will create that light struck aroma, right? The one that's skunky or like fresh coffee. So if you use something like a row hop extract, and row, RHO, like Greek row hop extract, it doesn't have those isomerized alpha acids in it. So it can, like it can be blasted with UV light and it's never going to develop that light struck flavor. Whereas if you have, think of something like a Corona in a clear glass bottle, that's very skunky, right? And that's because that clear glass is not providing any protection between the UV light and those isomerized alpha acids. So green bottles will provide you about 20% protection. Brown bottles provide about 80%. Your best bet is cans and kegs to prevent light struck. That's while it's in the package. You can pour that in into a glass and it can get light
Oh yeah.
struck very
Minutes.
quickly. And
When
any beer, like I've had a wit beer before get light struck. And that has very low IBUs, but it still has those isomerized alpha acids in it. So any beer that has isomerized iso alpha acids in it. Why do I keep saying isomerized iso?
Just say ISO.
I know iso alpha acids in it will become light struck, and it can be on a cloudy day.
Yeah, I don't even like buy that off flavor for off flavor classes. I just put a pitcher of beer outside for a couple of minutes,
Yeah,
and it's intense. People
it
are like,
is.
that's a, I don't like that, and I'm like,
Yeah, I remember us doing an off flavor class when I was working at Pilot and just putting an Erlenmeyer outside. And we were like, I don't know, it's kind of a cloudy day. And it was
Oh
so strong, so
no.
strong. So you can use those products. And that's why I don't remember which beer it is, but like MGD 54, 60, or whatever. There are some products that come in a clear glass bottle that are never going to get light struck. And that's because they use this product.
So if you're going to go buy clear bottles to study, you should probably know which ones those are. Or you just skunk your own beer. It's
Yeah,
easier.
exactly. And that's usually one, when people are learning off flavors, one, humans are very, very good at detecting it. You can detect light struck in like parts per thousand, as opposed to like parts per billion or parts per million, which is most compounds, which makes sense from, from an evolutionary point of view. If there's a skunk nearby, you want to be able to smell it from 50 yards away, not from 50 inches away. You don't want to get up close to a skunk and be like, is this a skunk? No, you need to be able to smell it from far away. So that's why humans are so sensitive to it. But those extracts do exist. I don't know. I mean, Rachel, do you know? I don't know how much they are used outside of like industrial lager.
I don't
Like, I
know.
don't think it's something that craft brewers
I'm
use.
not necessarily worried about it,
Yeah.
especially because I can. But I'm so small.
Right.
But yeah,
Yeah.
I think it would be definitely big mass produced beer thing, because beer's sitting going out on the shelf, and it's just once it's out of your brewery, it's out of your control, and you got to
Right.
do everything you can to protect it. Makes sense.
Right. So yeah, so we'll probably have a couple more episodes
Yeah, we
about
will.
hops. Like we feel bad. We're 4 years in, five almost 5 years in, and we're like, oh shit, beer does have four main ingredients.
And even if my nephew knows it, then we should talk about it.
Yes, well, thank you everyone for listening. And you can find us on social media at False Bottom Girls. You can email us falsebottomgirls@gmail.com. You can visit our website, falsebottomgirls.com. Thank you, Rachel. You need to
Thank
hop
you.
into the rest of your day.
Yes, I need to hop into the brewery and transfer my island hopper.
Ooh.
That's
And
what I will be doing.
what is your single hop for Island Hopper?
Columbus. It is very West Coast traditional. Straight everything you want from a West Coast. It's all you need from a beer. So good.
This has been False Bottom Girls.
And we make the brewing world go round.